Okay, boys and girls, moms and dads, children of all ages, ships at sea, and those landlubbers locked in by dirt. Yes, for everybody out there, we've got another radio fishing coming up. We got Captain Jay Withers here with me today, so it's Fishing Frank in the chair and Captain Jay across from me. Going to do a little tarpon, a little snook, a little redfish, a little shark, a little bit of everything. So anyway, let's get rid of the music and start the show. Okay, there we go. All right, morning, Jay.
Good morning.
What a beautiful April, except for the wind.
Yeah, the wind's been a little rough, but, you know, hey, yesterday was picture perfect Chamber of Commerce Day. It's beautiful. Yeah.
We had an unbelievable weekend. We had Gary Lumison over the weekend, and we just had an amazing weekend here, and everybody's just loving the weather. And let's get, like you say, this is a poster child week right now for Florida. I mean, what's going on with the fishing? I got a lot of, you're going to have to help me with the tarpon map when we get done too, because I got to get that up. I got about 55 emails in the last 2 weeks about, you know, actually the last week about where's the tarpon map. So you have to give me a hand when we get done. What's the big news out there right now?
Well, I think the biggest news is baits getting better and better all the time. The threadfin herring are all over the harbor right now, at the markers and certainly...
Okay, remind me when you leave, I'm going to give you some of the casting bubbles.
Okay.
Because you know how hard it is to cast the small threadfin at the mangroves for the snook and redfish.
Sure.
And stuff. They're so light. They don't weigh anything compared to real greenback.
That's right.
I've got the water fillable casting bubbles, and I got some small ones.
Okay.
And so you tie your leader on, put the casting bubble on, and tie your hook on. And it should stay between the hook and the leader. And in the air, it'll be real nice and heavy. You'll be able to zing it over, you know, and get your distance out of the thread fin. But when it hits the water, it just becomes nothing. There's no weight to it. So it shouldn't really, it would weigh about half, like maybe a little less than a tiny BB split shot. So it should be able to allow your thread fin to still swim and do whatever he's got to do. Yeah. Without interruption, but give you the distance to be able to use that little thread fin for the bait.
Right on.
So I'm going to give you some of those. Remind me.
Very
that.
Cool.
Because I'm gave some to a couple captains already, and I need a few more reports. See if my idea is going to work, or if it's just one of those ideas I had that I shouldn't have had. You know, let's face it, not all my ideas are really, really good. I'm hoping this one is, because it's harder and harder to find greenbacks, but the thread fin's predominant bait. They work just as well. They catch fish, but they're you can't cast them.
Yeah, and they do tend to take a little bit, you know, less abuse than what, you know, a pilcher or a greenback would. But yeah, you're right. Casting them can be a challenge. You know, I've been looking for the bigger ones, certainly for tarpon and some black-tipped sharks, but sometimes those markers are a hold of some of the smaller ones, and those are a challenge to cast with the mangroves for sure.
Yeah, and I mean, this is the time of year when the snook are keyed in on the bait fish. They want that oil for the reproduction and everything else, so, you know, having that bait gets to be more important. But if you can't use it, to keep them alive, we simply, if you don't have an adjustable spray head on your live well, you need to replace it with one that you can twist up. And just point it at the roof of the live well and let it rain down instead of spray in. Mm-hmm. And they usually live really good. It's the pressure that blows the scales off. Soft-scaled sardines destroys them.
Yeah. No, that's right. And in fact, I have mine an adjustable, so I have it actually going just above the surface of the water, so it doesn't beam them right in the face. And
so you're doing what, yeah. I'm doing. Yeah, just getting the pressure off the water so they don't get beat up and die. You've been on the water a lot lately.
Yeah.
So give me a clue. What's been the target fish? What are people asking to catch?
Well, you know, we've been having a lot of fun with snook, certainly in the backcountry. A lot of points and bars are holding some snook right now. But I've been spending a lot of time looking for some cobia. We've had a really good cobia season this year, and some triple tail. Had a lot of fun with triple tail.
Isn't it amazing how many triple tail there's been?
Oh, it's been out of control. I mean, days, honestly, if I wanted to catch every one, I've seen 40 or 50 in a day, Not them all big. I mean, sometimes you just see so many, you pass up the 13, 14 inches. Because yeah, you know,
but two or three, when's the last time you can remember that you cherry picked your triple tail?
I can't remember that. That's just it. So we've had a great season this year. You can catch them in artificial. You can catch them in live shrimp.
What artificial are you using?
I use typically they're called voodoo shrimps, or in those little small,
I've got the voodoos.
Yeah, little small shrimps like that. Sometimes even small little paddle tails, DOAs, Slayer lures, all those.
I was wondering if a 14 mirror lure would work.
Probably.
You know, probably. The smaller, not the 17, I think, might be a little big to really entice them good, but the smaller little 14. I've been curious to try that.
Yeah, and, you know, I've seen them so aggressive this year. It's been amazing, and it's great for clients because it's a fish they can see. They make a halfway decent presentation to it, and he's going to come out and eat it. It's amazing.
I think it's fun to watch the buck fever set in.
Oh, it is.
It's amazing because here you've got this guy on there, and he's just, you know, fisherman, da da da, da, and then all of a sudden, here's that triple tail set up right underneath the buoy.
Yeah.
He's laid up there nice and quiet, and all of a sudden they get up, and you see the rod just vibrating right before he goes to cast.
I literally had a guy last week that we set up on a fish that we saw coming up to the buoy. He was pushing the crab trap. And we knew he was a good one, right? You know, he was probably 5 pounds or so. But right. Anyway, we get up there, and he makes the cast using a little shrimp and pulls the shrimp away from the buoy. Literally, the triple tail makes a wake, pushing to get the shrimp. And he sets the hook. The fish jumps immediately, and the guy's expression on his face, that is the photo I should have got of that guy, not the fish.
It's the memories that, you know, I'll be... Well, I'm not, my lifestyle, I'm not going to live that long. But as I get older, laying there in my deathbed, I will remember a lot of those faces.
Oh, yeah. And I told him, I said, that's the photo I should have got.
Yeah.
Because that look right there of your facial expression was over the top good.
Yeah, those are the ones you remember all the time. And, yeah, no, and triple tail is one of my passions because of that. It's hunting, it's fishing, it's accuracy, it's everything all combined.
Yeah.
Kind of like what people like to do with bonefish, you know, when you're in real clear water and you get to see them and present that perfect cast.
That's
on
right.
Them and do all that. But I actually think they fight better than a bonefish. I've caught 28 to 34-inch bonefish, and they're great. They got that big burst, but that triple tail's so wide, you get the burst. They don't peel a line off, but you get one that's acrobatic and feels like playing in the air.
Yeah.
And it's cool. And, I mean, because they dolphin jump and, you know, kind of porpoise. Absolutely. Out of the water. I've had them do just about every trick you can think of, and some that just stay in and pull the whole way back to the boat.
Yeah. It's tough to beat, you know, light tackle, triple tail fishing. It's tough to beat. And you can't argue with a table fare.
No,
I mean, it's I say it's chicken of the sea.
Yeah, no, it's some of the best eating in the world.
No doubt about it.
So, anyway, the triple tail are there. What else is going on? What are people asking about?
Well, so, and really, my mark of tarpon fishing season starts April 15th. Really, if there's a season for me, it's April 15th, July 15th.
Right.
Now, that doesn't mean we don't catch them later in the season, but that's kind of the window where I target them.
Well, that's when you book trips for
them. That's exactly right.
Because... used to be you never really booked trips till sometime in May because they might not have been here. It could have been
too
cold, too rainy, too whatever. But now by the middle of April, you can pretty much, you know you've got a really good shot if you're booking the trip, say, in October or September.
That's right.
You know, and you've got a good shot of being able to produce what you want as far as tarpon goes.
Sure.
So it's, I call it my booking season, not so much the tarpon season.
That's right.
Well, we never want to book trips that we don't think we can do. It's like somebody showing up in December and want to go shark fishing.
Yeah, that's tough.
You're like, well, we can try, but we might end up having to do something else.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah, sure.
You want to do the best you can for them, but being realistic at the same time.
Yeah. So, And for me, the tarpon fishing, and when I'm booking, like you're talking about, you know, I book areas where I know I'm gonna be likely fishing up in the harbor or maybe South Pine Island Sound, where these fish are starting to make their trip up or coming out of the rivers.
So how are you seeing the tarpon now? Any congregations of them? Is there any place that's a little more steady?
Well, so there's a couple spots in the harbor that tend to hold fish, as you know. There's a lot of deep areas, the 20 to 20 foot holes, whether it be near the west wall, kind of in between, let's say, the west wall and Alligator Creek, or even down by Pirate Harbor.
Right.
Those areas tend to hold most of the fish. But just literally in the last, say, 7 or 8 days, we've seen more and more fish show up, and I've seen sharks in there. So that's kind of when one shows up, the other's pretty close behind.
Yep. And how are you doing on sharks?
Actually, really well. I did get embarrassed yesterday by a big hammerhead.
Really?
Yeah, we saw him on the beach. I was looking for tarpon on the beach, and I saw a fish, this hammerhead, just on the surface. The water was still a little dingy from that west wind, so I was using my side imaging on my Hummingbird to look for the fish, and I didn't have to use it for that one because he was on the surface. And we had a small stingray we used, and he ate it. But he never stopped.
About 14, 16?
He was probably, I just showed it to Robert. He was probably 12 footer, but good enough. And I was prepared for the 8 to 9 foot bull sharks.
Right.
So I was here at Fishing Frank's today getting heavier swivels.
What's amazing is people don't realize is you've got this big group of 8 foot bull sharks, 6 foot bull sharks.
Yeah.
I mean, and they're just mean, aggressive. I mean, they're just crazy sharks. And a hammerhead of about the same size will come in, and they just all go away.
That's right.
He's the boss.
That's right.
Nobody messes with him.
And he could care less about our boat yesterday. I mean, literally, I had him circle my boat.
At 12 foot, he doesn't care.
Yeah, he doesn't. No. He was right behind my Yamaha. It had just come right up behind it. Like, what is this? Why is it in my way?
Yeah.
And we weren't ready yet, so we were trying to get ready for him. And finally, we did get it out there, and he ate it like it was nobody's business.
I think it would take a great white to upset a hammerhead.
Yeah, I think you're probably right.
I don't.
And there will be a day that we see that.
Yeah.
Close.
Yeah, well, over the last few years, we've had great whites coming into the Gulf. And yeah. I was writing about the Mancos and the great whites on an article, and I'm going to get all kinds of flack because, oh, we don't have great whites, we don't have Mancos.
We do.
But we do.
But they're further out.
And, but one day, they're going to figure this out.
Yeah.
One of them is going to come around Boca Grande Pass during tarpon season.
And it looks like a buffet line.
And... he's going to hang out for a while, and then next year when he comes back, he'll bring a couple of his buddies. I've wondered why it hasn't happened before.
Yeah, myself too, because there's so many sharks present in Boca Grande Pass.
Because you got the tiger sharks show up for it, the bull sharks, the lemons, the salmon, every shark out there, but not the great whites and the Mancos. Those are two I haven't seen there,
right.
Although they're becoming more common in the Gulf.
Yeah, absolutely. I hear stories about people have seen them while they're offshore fishing. And a lot of times our fishery, you know, the guys will go 30 miles, 35 miles or so, and just all of a sudden one pops up.
Yeah.
So that you're right. I think you're right. One day we're going to see one or hear about one close to the beach.
And then I think once it starts, I think it will.
And it probably will be earlier in the season. I mean, I don't know that they're big fans of that warmer water, but, you know, certainly that's going to happen.
It's going to be interesting to see.
Absolutely, it will. Absolutely.
And it could be right. That might have been the key, is the water temperature is just too warm for them to be enticed up for the extra food.
Yeah.
But I think it's possible. So anyway, going back onto it, you hooked a hammerhead, peeled you off, took everything apart, and that's their job, I guess.
It is, and you know, just when I think I'm prepared for that, you know, I have a rig specifically for shark fishing and for some of our Goliath grouper, you know, fishing where, you know, I had the drag set pretty snug. Snug enough that a 400 or 500 pound Goliath grouper is not going to pull a whole lot of drag. Same way with maybe 8 or 9 foot bull shark.
Right.
So, and we've caught 8 or 9 foot bull sharks. They pull a little drag out and you can reel it up, and you pull a little drag out and they'll reel it up. When this hammer ate, he never stopped. The drag just was ripping line off that Tiagra. So I'm just looking at it like in awe that he's dumping that much line. And Robert here put 250-pound Power Pro on there. I think it's got 500 yards on it. Now, we didn't get to that 500 yards because we started moving after him. But we had a lot of pressure on him. And literally, it broke. And, of course, the guy that had the fish on thought, oh, you know, maybe my knot came undone. I said, the knot didn't come undone. He reels it in, half the swivel still tied on the knot. Just broke the swivel.
Yeah. So what you want to do for the hammerheads is I would suggest the AFW ball bearings.
That's exactly what I just bought.
Okay.
Yep.
The reason being is those, what you get into with the hammerheads and some of those is the constant motion of metal on metal with the standard swivels.
Yep.
It literally eats like you took a file to the swivel. It'll eat it away, and then it just comes loose. And we've learned over the years with the hammerheads and a couple other ones, if we don't use the ball bearings, and a lot of times when I was back using, you know, 12-foot and, you know, 8-foot and bigger leaders, I was putting a ball bearing in the middle and a ball bearing on the end. Otherwise, nice. They would it would just chafe the swivel, and all of a sudden when you look close, you'll see, because the swivel is a bent eye, and it bends, comes up to form an eye, and bends in, kind of like, you know, one of those university things, you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah,
it's got
the
feet on the bottom, then comes up in a U-shaped. That's kind of what they do with a swivel. It's kind of pressed in there. But when you use the ball bearing, it's a whole different ball game.
Yeah, and I bought just three packs of them here. I think they were the 360-pound ball bearing swivel. And Robert looked at it, he says, you'll at least have a chance now.
Yeah, it's just one of the weird things that a hammerhead can put. I don't know if they take off in a spinning motion or what it is that they do, but to literally wear the metal out on a swivel, and it does take that long.
Yeah. This one felt like he was headed to Cuba. So.
Yeah, but it wasn't that long before he took the swivel apart.
That's right. That's right.
That's what freaks me out. How can they do that in so short a time, literally wear the metal out of a swivel?
Yeah.
And, you know, it... all I can picture in my head is them taking off like the blades of a helicopter, just spinning around in a circle or something. I have no idea how they work it. But anyway, kind of drop back. You were looking for tarpon. I'm hearing a whole bunch, like you say, up in the middle of the harbor. How's it been down like Captiva Rocks and the Intercoastal down there? Anything going on?
Yeah, so same report I can give you with the harbor tarpon. It's progressively gotten better and better there. Lots of threadies in the harbor. I'm sure that helps. But as far as Captiva Rocks area, there have been some fish showing up. A lot of them are just singles, twos and threes sometimes. But I haven't spent a lot of time there. The fish showed up in Boca Grande Pass a little earlier this year. The 17th of April, it was a big stack of fish that rolled into Boca Grande Pass. They've been a little picky to eat. A couple of us have been able to get them eat on crabs, free line with a heavy split shot. I know some of the guys catch them on squirrel fish. But the current in the morning over the full moon.
Is there still many guys jigging out there?
There are a few, but it's still early in the game.
Right,
a lot
still
of time,
early.
Yeah.
No, I'm just wondering, you know, what's been going on. Because I get everybody comes in. I mean, I've got the guys, and the ones I feel bad for are the ones that only get to come every 3 or 4 or 5 years, you know.
Yeah.
Everything changes on them. They're like, what do I do? What do I do?
Yeah.
So you got to sit down and teach them how to do everything. And show them the bait rigs and the jig rigs and the, you know, all the different types of ways to do it. So when they get out there, they at least have a chance.
Yeah.
Because I always, my heart goes out to the guys. They spend thousands of dollars to get here and to go out and do this.
No
and
doubt.
And then all of a sudden everything changed on them. And it's, I've always been, you know, I just feel bad with all that. But there's so many different things you can do in the past. Now, one of the things that I've been doing instead of the split shot is I use the rubber cores.
Okay. Yeah.
Now, the reason being is they don't stay on the line well. And they'll stay on pretty good for a cast and work and all that. But once they get the fight on, they often disappear.
Yeah, sure.
And, you know, one of the things I always find is funny is people say, well, that lead's disintegrating in the water. Lead's a base element. It doesn't disintegrate. The tin and all the other metals that make, you know, it usable for a sinker, those get eaten away. But lead pretty much, it's like gold. When you throw gold in the water, it doesn't dissolve in the
water.
That's
right. That's
it's
right.
Only one level above gold. And, you know, it's kind of funny to when people see that. But anyway, there is so many different things. But I've been using the rubber cores. When I'm pitching those crabs and thread fins up in there, I went to using a lot of the rubber core stuff because it's longer rather than as round, because some of the times I'm using like a number one split shot,
mm-hmm.
and it catches a lot more weeds.
Yeah,
and that's,
I see that.
That's the only reason I started going to the rubber core over the split shot, was because it's not as interference.
Yeah, so, and you're right, I have split shots, and I have some of the smaller rubber cores. You know, a lot of times, I often wonder, too, on the split shot, these heavy split shots, where you're crimping it on a 80-pound fluorocarbon leader, and you got to crimp it on pretty tight, yeah. You know? So I just wonder, too, is that damaging the fluorocarbon? I mean,
yeah, the good thing is, what size it line are you using?
So I use typically that 65 Max Quattro from PowerPro as my main line, and then I use typically 60 or 80 fluorocarbon depending on how clean the water is.
Yeah, if you're using 80, you've got 20% to work with there.
Yeah.
Figuring the 80, the way you figure any kind of plastic, whether it's mono or fluorocarbon, is if it says 100, it's actually 130.
Okay.
They always have it 30% underrated for the knot.
Ah.
Okay. And so if it says 80 pound, you've got 30% more to work with. So when you're squeezing it, if you've got 60 pound mainline, you've got some play there to weaken it up till it's down to your mainline.
So you're still at 60. I got you.
But the problem with braid is it's so underrated because the knots are so weak.
Mm-hmm.
And so now you've got a line at 60 that's really, if you were to put it on a machine and try and break it, has an 80 or 100-pound test breaking strength. I mean, quite often they're underrated 30, 40, 50% because it's almost impossible to get a good knot to hold. You got to double the line. You got to do this. You got to do that. It's so hard to get because zero stretch means pop easier.
Yeah, that's right.
And people say, well, how can I pop 80-pound test? But if you got a 180-pound or 200-pound guy and a 150-pound fish and they both pull at the same time, that's 80 easy.
Yeah, I mean, no problem.
Bink.
No problem. You know? And that's part of why when people catch tarpon and it jumps and you're all reared back on that fish comes back and lands on that line, and we all know that's a lot of time, that's a kiss of death.
Yeah.
He's going to land on that line. That landing on the line cannot absorb that much shock.
It's too much pressure.
Yep.
That's one of the only reasons why mono is actually a better bet with the tarpon, because it's so much more forgiving.
Yeah, sure.
And but you can't throw, you know, you can only throw 25, maybe 30-pound test mono on a spinning reel.
That's right.
And get any kind of distance on it all. And you can put, and people don't understand, but I equate 25 and 30-pound mono with 40 and 50-pound braid.
Yeah.
As far as, you know, pulling strength and, you know, the ability to get stuff in.
That's right. Well, and, you know, for me, you know, of course, you know, a lot of clients, you know, you gotta be able to cast these small little crabs, long distances.
Absolutely.
And, you know,
have you tried the 832 from Suffolk?
No, so I'm a Power Pro guy from Shimano, you know, so that Max Quattro has been really good to me.
I don't know what it is.
So Power
Pro, like the Super Slick?
No, it's Power Pro Max Quattro. It's 65-pound braid that I use, but it has the same line diameter as 50-pound braid.
Okay, so they're playing the game. Now, this takes me back to when monofilament line mm-hmm. was still the main thing, and they came out with line class monofilament line.
Right on.
And remember I was just telling you about 12-pound test is actually 30% more, so it's 16.
Sure.
And they say 16-pound test, the diameter of 12. It was just 12-pound mono, but it was correctly labeled.
Right. Right.
And it's the same thing goes on with the braided line. A 1,000ths of an inch of plastic only holds X amount of pressure, no matter what they do to it, harder, softer.
Sure.
And it's the same thing with the Kevlar Spectra Dyneema fibers. And so what PowerPro is doing is correctly labeling the line more to its line class.
Yeah, and they've actually, they've changed, there's a couple different, and I probably should know the details of why.
No, but I'm just saying, that to me makes sense.
Yeah.
I hadn't heard about it, and I don't know the exact overrating or underrating that PowerPro is using, but it's absolutely true. If, you know, you can always step down one and probably still be in that line class.
Yeah, hey, absolutely. One of the things that I've been able to do with it is, you know, when catching small crabs,
right.
I still have the casting distance that I wouldn't typically with 50-pound braid,
right.
But I have that 65, so when you hook a fish on the beach and maybe it's a pod of fish of 30 or 40 fish, inevitably that fish is going to run many times right through the school.
Absolutely. Okay?
So it's not necessarily that fish that breaks you off. It's the fish that he's running by that your 50-pound braid is bumping into, and it can't absorb that much pressure. So being able to step up with the 65 and still have the line capacity on your reel.
Right.
So it's made a lot of sense. I used it right when it first came out last year, kind of prototype stuff, and big fan of it. So
no, that's good.
Guys, check it out.
No, I'll check it out. Like I say, I'm going to have to go into line diameters and see exactly what they're doing. Because one thing I know for sure about line companies is they're always looking for a new marketing hook.
Sure.
So it'll be, it was nice when Bob used to be here because he had a micrometer and we could actually, you know, get into the specifics of all that. That's kind of where we found out about the monofilament line, using a micrometer and math measurements. But Bob was a math genius guy. I'm going to have to find another one because that ain't me.
Right on.
But we'll check it out and see what happens. But that's really cool. I'll check out the line. Yeah. I met the inventor of Power Pro and really, really great guy.
Yeah, he
one
is.
One of the nicest people I've ever run into. What a pleasure to sit. And he was in the store here for a long time, and I really enjoyed talking to him.
Yeah, I had the opportunity to fish with him. He's a great guy. I don't know that he gets to fish a lot, sadly enough. He's busy enough. He's making lines all the time. But great dude. And he actually, that was part of, you know, the introduction to that Max Quattro, and it's been great stuff for me.
No, I get it. I've been using a lot of the 832 lately. Because it's so soft and it's cast, and you know, it's there's only a little bit of difference between some of them, and a lot of what I got to go with is, can I make money on them, or how much extra do I got to charge? And you know, and that was one of the reasons a lot of the lines I've picked, I try and get all the performance, but at least see what kind of pricing I can get so I can give the customers a reasonable amount without having to charge them super extra for all
the
stuff.
So that makes sense.
You know, and so I've been working, I've been doing good with some of the Suffolk and the Berkeleys. And it's one thing it's hard to do is get a buy-in Power Pro. They're so strong in the market, you know, and what you do with that, and you know, I've still got to make some money spoiling it.
Sure.
So it's one of the reasons I haven't really looked at it so much, because it's costly. So anyway, getting back into it, with the tarpon, are you seeing any benefits to natural bait versus artificials, or artificials versus natural?
Well, so early in the season, I always like to throw artificial. I always keep a 5-inch paddle tail with a nice stout jig head.
Any particular one you like?
So the paddle tails I typically will use are from Reaction Innovations.
Really?
I've used a company called Flats HQ down in Naples. So a lot of these 5-inch...
I've got the Reaction. I don't have the Flats HQ.
Yeah,
one.
So... really, a lot of paddle tails now, they're making them really good. Really good natural colors, too. So I always keep one of those ready to go on a typical 5-aught. I use VMC heavy-duty swim bait hooks.
Right.
So they're super
like
stout.
Like the worm hooks.
That's exactly right. Yeah. And they're super stout. And you guys have my jig heads here, the Articulus jig head.
Right.
So I use it on that rig. But I always have it ready to go because, you know, even if you're pitching out live baits off each side and you see a single rolling fish, it's easy to pitch that bait right over to them.
Now, have you been doing Robert's trick with putting your swim bait below a bobber like 5-6 feet and then just let it go out and just let the swim bait dance out there?
No, I haven't. But I can certainly see that being very effective. I know guys have done that with the DOA Baitbuster.
Baitbusters, now.
And I mean,
well, I was thinking with your articulating head, your jig head, if you tied it to the jig head, and then you have that wave bouncing the bobber, which bounces the jig head. You know, everything affects the other thing. And with that articulating, it would allow that swim tail to just flop more.
Yeah.
And
you know, a lot of times the fish that are eating, you know, they may come up to the surface, but as they go back down, a lot of times that's when they'll feed. So having it just under a cork is probably not such a bad idea.
Well, one of the things that we've found we've had to do is we put it 5 or 6 feet below bobber, drop it off the side of the boat, and then open the bail and then go away from it.
Yeah.
Because you can't cast it.
That's
so,
right.
You know, it's just too much line and leader to cast. So just drop it in the water, leave the bail open, and move away from it with the trolling motor to get it where you want it.
That's right.
And then just close the bail up on it and, okay, do your thing while I do mine.
And, you know, and sometimes I even do that with using threadfin herring. You know, because the threadfin, to me, you know, they're a little sensitive to landing flat On a long cast.
Oh, yeah. One long cast. And if he hits head first, he's
no
fine.
No problem.
But if he belly flops...
Yeah, it puts a little damage on him. So.
Yeah, he's not what he was
yeah,
2 seconds
so
before.
So a lot
that.
Of times, I'll do exactly what you just said. I'll just drop him over the side of the boat, you know, have a customer maybe flip him over the side, and then I'll use the trolling motor to gain some distance away from that. That way, it's very lively, very active. And you can always judge, you know, based from when they put him over the side, this client on this side of the boat drops it out, you can tell him to stop, this one can keep going, that way they're staggered a little bit.
Yep.
And then the baits are pretty lively, they're not getting abused from that
exactly
30-foot fall.
Yeah, because I mean, I've launched a couple of thread fins and I watched it go, and then I see it and I go, oh no,
that's exactly right.
It took me an hour to get that dozen thread fins,
I know,
you know, to hold it alive well, because you know, you get those nice 6-8 inch ones, and you know, you finally get that dozen of them, you say, okay, I'm good for a while, and then you pitch what he hit, he belly flops, you're like, oh
yeah.
Yeah, that hurts. So anyway, it's the cowboy syndrome. You baby him and you take care of him, then you zing him out there to their death. Okay. Getting back on, have you been back on the flats much? Are you doing any much for split charters? We're okay, we're gonna go hunt the tarpon, but if they're not doing well, all right, let's go do something else and come back to this.
Yeah, so really I did a couple trips now probably 8 or 10 days ago on some snook, when I started getting some bait. Some solid bait.
Right.
Now, I love to throw our topwater artificials. Big fan of that, but not everybody wants to do that, right? So,
well, it's hard. Most people can't do
that's
that.
That's exactly right.
That's the top skill level of fishing. It's more than fly fishing, more than anything else. Correctly using a topwater is the ultimate
art
form.
It takes the right kind of cadence and, you know, somebody not to be even watching the bait, because inevitably the fish will blow up on the bait and they set the hook and they'll miss him.
Isn't it amazing how quick humans are?
Yes.
Everybody always talks about, oh, the speed of this or that snake striking or this or that. But for a human to be able to see the fish come up, jerk the bait out of his mouth before he can close the mouth.
That's pretty impressive.
And
yeah.
They do it all the time.
Yeah.
I mean, just regular guys.
Oh, and yeah.
Look at that. Boom.
I tell people, don't even look at it. You know, if I see they have, you know, they get all excited because they see the fish blow up. And I do. I mean, Everybody's done it. But if you can try to not pay attention to that, just keep doing your twitching and let that fish start bending the rod.
So what are your top waters? What do you like?
So I've been throwing lots of their spooks. I've been I'm a mixed bag of everything. I like big baits too. For the longest time I threw the Spiel Stick Shad 114.
Right.
But now I think Live Target's got a really solid one. I don't know the number on the bigger one.
Yeah.
But it's probably 5 inches.
Yeah.
But if I'm going a lot of time, don't be surprised if you catch on a 5-inch topwater an 18-inch redfish.
Right.
Because if they're hungry, they're going to eat it. But if you throw that 5-inch bait, don't be surprised you catch a 40-inch snook either.
Right.
I mean, so that's kind of my, you know, I have one of those tied up. When we're fishing the backcountry, I always have a big topwater rig ready to go. Because you never know when big school jacks show up. Or, you know, maybe you see snook busting on the shoreline that maybe you can't reach with that live whitebait.
Right.
Right? So,
well,
anytime.
We're going to fix that. We're going to get some casting bubbles.
Okay.
And see what we
can't
do
wait
with
to see
that.
Those.
Yeah.
Can't wait to see those. Yeah, so my snook fishing's been pretty good. My red fishing's been a little tough.
Redfish it's been a kind of a weird year, and everybody's kind of freaking out about it. And I keep trying to remind them and say, listen, guys, quit thinking this year. What happened 2 years ago? Because that's the fish we're fishing for now.
Yeah.
And, you know, when we have these tough years, my brain's always trying to go back 2 years ago to what would have happened to the eggs or the fry.
Right.
Was there a freeze, a red tide? What happened to kill off so many babies that we don't have a good year this year? Because it's never about the fish that we're fishing for, it's about what happened when they were being born.
Right.
You know, growing up, something happen at that point? And I don't remember, but I think there was a fall red tide a couple years ago.
Yeah, I think you're right. Spending a lot of days on the water, you know, when you have a red tide, you just try to go fish areas that it doesn't have it.
Right.
And a lot of times it pushes fish in those areas that don't have it, and you can have a great day fishing.
Oh,
but you're right. I mean, the red fishing's been a little slower by norm.
Mm-hmm.
And I've had a lot of success just fishing for nice big trout. We got some big trout this early spring.
Yep.
And certainly some big snook too.
I think it's amazing right now. We don't have any. We never really had a big trout season this year. We did have a little bit, and there was a couple of weeks where we had some pretty good numbers.
Well, it got warm quick.
But all of a sudden, we got some nice trout here now.
Yeah.
I mean, they're over 20 inches.
That's right.
There's only. With the limit being 4/1/20, you're gonna max out your over 20 quickly if you find a trout.
That's right. And a lot of times, you know, I tell people all the time, you know, when I do seminars, we're talking about, you know, catching numbers of fish. Certainly, if you're ready to catch numbers of trout and you're catching them from 12 to say 17 inches. That's where those are schooling fish, right?
Right.
Schooling trout. But if you want to catch the gator trout, that over 20 inch, not always is that fish going to be with those other groups. They're going to be loners.
Right.
You know, and I, you know, we love fishing Charlotte Harbor, and I have some friends that fish over on the East Coast, and they catch those big trout, 10, right. 12 pounds sometimes.
We've had a few of those this year.
Yeah, absolutely. I've seen the photo. I haven't caught any, but.
I think the biggest one I think I've ever caught was like 28, 29
inches. Yeah, that's a solid trout.
But it was one. And I'm trying to remember, you know, because people were seeing those big trout, and I was like, you know, I do remember that I did get a bigger one, and it was back in the 90s. But this year, everybody was complaining they weren't catching many, but every once in a while, a guy comes in and goes, oh, man, I got a 28-inch trout.
Yeah.
26s, 27s were fairly commonplace this year.
Sure, sure.
So it was a year of big trout, but not numbers of trout.
That's right. And, you know, I actually had a guy catch a really nice one early in the spring, and it was 26 inches or so. But the guy, I took a photo of it, but the guy's like 6'6". 270 pounds, and it made the trout look like he was 15 inches. I'm like,
well, that's like, we've got this, what we call the picture grip.
Yeah.
Because a boga grip is much better for bringing the fish in the boat. The scale's unbelievably accurate. They're great stainless. They last your whole life. But they're so big when you put them on a trout. We've got a little one for like $18, $19 that really, you know, once you get them in with the boat with the boga grip, you take the boga grip off, put it down, and you grab this one to control the fish, and it's more of a reasonable size. Because like you said, here you've got this great big guy and this great big grip, and your picture looks
bitty fish. I almost wanted to have his wife hold the fish because he made it look like it was 15 inches, and I'm like, well, nobody's going to believe me. It's 26, 27 inches, right? But no, it's the flats fishing has been actually pretty good.
You're going to get some Captain J t-shirts and put a ruler across the, you know, across
you have an
the
idea.
Chest.
I know a company that can print those, right?
Yes. Web zone.
That's right. Hey, we just started something right there.
I mean, go from shoulder to shoulder with just a ruler right across the top of the chest. So
that's
when you
right.
hold the fish up, you get to see how big it
perfect.
Is.
Perfect. Perfect. Yeah. So, I mean, I don't know. Our flats fishing was pretty good. And, you know, like I said earlier, the bait's gotten a little better here. So we're able to, you know, get a little bit more bait than what we typically, we were throwing the net for an hour and a half, hour and 45 minutes, and getting sometimes 100 pieces. It was tough there for a long time. I was way past my quota for throwing the net, I promise you. But, you know, now it's getting a little better. They're starting to show up more, certainly on the flats. And, I mean, I hear guys just hammering the fish, snook particularly, on the flats. And, you know, a lot of the guys, you know, myself included, are, you know, kind of really focused in on, you know, those sharks, those tarpon, those cobia still are messing around in the harbor a little bit. Guys catching them out on the reefs too, so it's a lot of fun right now. I mean, it's a good time to be in Southwest Florida, I'm telling you right now.
This is, I mean, I don't think the Chamber of Commerce could come up with a better thing than just
no doubt about that.
One day on the water right now will make a believer out of Southwest Florida.
I mean, no doubt about it, the wind's been a little kind of a pain, but we can't stop it.
The only thing better about this year is we've had some days with west wind, and then it goes north, then it goes east.
Yeah.
it's not really kind of going out of one direction. So you get to fish, like when it comes out of the east and north, you concentrate up on the east side of the harbor and out along the beaches.
That's
but
right.
When it comes out of the west, then you can fish the inside of Gasparilla Island, the
Absolutely.
Inside of Captiva, the west side of
you
the
harbor.
You
just got to be smart about where your locations are.
The only wind that you can't hide from here is south.
That's exactly right. And it's
you
south
get a
is
south
gonna
wind,
blow.
It is not... I mean, because the harbor kind of goes north and
yeah.
south, so you can't go to the east, you can't go to the west. You got, what, the tip of Pine Island you can fish?
That's about right. Yeah. Yeah.
But east, north, or west, there's always a place to hide. And they've been switching enough where it was kind of nice because, okay, for these days I was right along the beach fishing the Gulf
yeah.
and on the east winds and that. And okay, well, now it switched out of the west, so now I'm going inside the island and to the west wall. And, you know,
sure.
it's been kind of... It's forced you to fish different areas. You weren't
yeah.
allowed to get settled into, okay, I'm going to fish this side, because the next day you're right in the middle of the wind. You had to go somewhere else.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, there's so I pick up a lot of times out at Pink Elephant at Boca Grande, and when you come out of that little inlet right there, it can be a little sporty. And I have a Pathfinder, as you know, and it's a 24-footer, which is pretty solid for that kind of wind,
yeah.
and you're blowing right in, going right into it, right? So, I tell you, you know, having to cross the harbor can be a little sporty, but you're right. If you know the direction of the wind, which you need to pay attention to, and you know the direction of wind, where it's coming from, and you know areas that you can hide from it,
well,
that's the perfect case scenario.
Yeah, you're probably going to cross a little bit of snotty water,
mm-hmm.
but if you time it right, or, you know, plan your trip properly, okay, I got a little bit of snotty water to go across, and then I'm going to be sitting in the calm enjoying the beautiful weather. And that's one of the things that a lot of the captains like you, when you're getting out there, you know, you look at the wind and go, okay, all right, today, well, I'm going to go down here and I'm
yeah.
going to cut across here, and then I'm going to come back up and I'm going to sit right in here. And it's some ways I think it helped the fishing this year, because no one was able to get in a settled pattern.
Yeah.
You couldn't just go, okay, I'm going to go to this spot here and fish those fish and hit or miss on those.
Yeah.
It forced you to move around and do stuff. And I've heard this from so many of the captains, and in the back of my head I'm thinking, yeah, well, it's, you know, it's making us move. It's
yeah.
making us find more fish. I think that's why the captains have done so well this season, in a year where the average fisherman is not doing as well. And I think it's because they keep trying to go to the same places irrespective
yeah.
of the weather.
That's right.
Where the captain's going to hide because he's out there every day. He don't want to get beat up.
That's right.
And he's got customers who don't want to get beat up.
Sure. And, you know, I think that a lot of those days where it's blowing 15 to 20, you know, you're right. It might be rough in the initial, you know, and you're in that open water. But I have been able to run and hide in the islands, you know, like Gasparilla Sound, Bull Bay, Turtle Bay. And sometimes you'll be sitting on the backside of a shoreline, and it doesn't feel like it's windy at all.
No,
like, where'd the wind
beautiful.
Go?
Yeah.
Oh, it's still there, but we're just hiding.
When you get that one customer who kind of throws a little high arc, and
oh,
then
yeah.
the bait goes all the way behind the
That's
boat.
That's exactly right. Yeah. So, I was
fishing the west wall one day, and we had a bad west wind. I mean, it was blowing, I think, 20, 25. And I was able to come around through the cutoff and come down the west side. And we're sitting there, and beautiful fish. We're catching all these fish. And one guy says, well, what were you talking about? It's not that windy. And at that point, he just threw his bait, and it went just above the top of the trees, blew it all the way back behind us like he had cast it
oh,
backwards.
Yeah. He
oh, went,
yeah.
I guess it is rough out here.
Yeah, you get laid in behind those islands, and it doesn't feel so windy, but no doubt about it. I tell you the other thing, we, you know, sometimes we'll complain a little bit about the wind. One, we can't do anything about it, but there is some benefit to that. You know, the fish maybe are not as spooky. Okay, when you have flat, calm days, those can be a challenge day to fish sometimes.
When that water's clear and flat, you
it's
gotta
tough.
Be calm and sneaky.
Yeah.
I mean, any little thing you do. I mean, one person stomps his foot and those fish
Game
head
over.
For Texas.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. So sometimes you gotta use the wind a little bit to your advantage.
All right. Well, here's one last thing, because I know you don't get many days on the land right now, so you got to get
yeah.
going. Any advice for the average angler coming up this week? Anything they should be looking for?
Well, I would still maybe try to pick on some triple tail. I mean, it's an easy thing to look for. You can get your shrimp here. You can throw some artificial shrimp. That'd be an easy one to play with.
Are you putting scent on your artificial shrimps? Or
not at all.
Basically sight and sound activated.
Yeah, if I can't get him to eat. Now, I did fish on the beach and found some triple tail. I couldn't get him to eat the artificial, so I always have some backup live shrimp.
Right.
You put a lot
and
of shrimp on.
You don't want big ones.
No, you really don't. Maybe 3-inch.
Yeah, you want somewhere like what we would call choice to select.
Right,
and
right.
And downsize your hook. I go to a 20-pound leader, 15-20-pound leader light line, and I'm using the smaller shrimp with a number 2 hook rather than like a 2-aught or a 3-aught,
right,
trying to get that little shrimp to be able to throw, because I always did it with 6-pound mono.
Okay.
And 20-pound
Oh, you were
leader.
Looking for the game, 6-pound mono.
But they didn't have braid when I was learning to do triple tail. They didn't exist.
Fair enough.
But I'd throw 6-pound mono and 15-to-20-pound leader with number 2 hooks and try and toss those little baits at them.
Yeah.
Even the big ones seem to like those little baits. Now, they will hit a big bait.
Sure.
But it seems like they go after the small ones quicker.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, and we didn't talk about, we just mentioned a little bit of sharks, but you asked what I'd recommend, too. For the average angler, you can get some shrimp and go, I would say, down on the bars just south of Two Pines, right at Two Pines, and there's lots of bonnet head sharks.
There you go.
Lots. And you know they will love to eat some shrimp. And when I say lots of bonnet heads, I'm talking the good size ones, too, 2 to 3 footers.
Yeah.
And on light tackle, great action.
And
great action.
That's something you want to use 10-15-pound braid for.
Sure.
And you don't need a steel leader, although you can. And I'm using any size shrimp from small ones to larger ones. It really doesn't matter. If you can get some what we would call choice or selects, and I put one line out with a bobber, trying to keep it just drifting about at the level of whatever the grass is at that point, and then freeline another one.
Yeah, I saw, and I was in probably 2.5 foot of water on top of the bar, and bonnet head sharks swimming away everywhere. And I did that, and it's probably going back a month ago, I saw them there, and I circled back around, and I said, I mean, there's lots of sharks here, and on light tackle, they're a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah.
And
rods are used for trout.
Absolutely. Exact same. And we put them on, put a small cork on, about 2.5 feet or so, maybe 2 feet from the rod tip, just a freeline shrimp. And a lot of times, that bonnet head would come to the surface chasing down that shrimp. It was a hoot to catch them.
What I really enjoyed about that when I was taking people out was I'd be going along and see something move, swing back up around, and drift across that flat or the trolling motor push pole as slow as you could go and give them time to actually just move down the flat. And so they could stand on the bow and see the sharks pushing off, because I think they enjoyed that almost as much as catching
Absolutely.
Them. Because
sure.
just all of a sudden here comes this shark, and all of a sudden he sees the boat and just hauls butt, you know, or just goes around it. And just to actually be able to see it without, you know, I don't know how to describe what I'm saying, but just the visual of just kind of drifting that flat and watching the sharks come up.
Well, it's all about the experience. I think that's where you're headed for. And it's, you know, it certainly is about catching, no doubt about it. But the experience that people see out on the boat and things like that, you know, a lot of times when we're shark fishing.
And when you can combine the two of them, the seeing and the catching and all that, that's just Charlotte Harbor at its finest.
Yeah, absolutely. And our water's going to start cleaning up even more and more. The beaches will get clean. We've been catching some black tips out on the beach. So our fishery is really starting to light up on fire right now.
Well, anything else you want to go over?
I think that's it, man. I had a great time.
All right. Well, anyway, boys and girls, this is Fishing Frank here in the chair. This is Captain Jay Withers in the chair across from me. We're kind of doing a little random shot about fishing in Charlotte Harbor. There's an icon of him standing in his boat, just kind of cruising along by the flats and the islands. Click that, it will take you to his website, give you all his information. If you're in the car and you want his telephone number, what's your phone number?
Yeah, 941-204-5229.
204-5229. Okay, so you can quick him a call and book a trip and go out and have some fun with the triple tail or the cobia or the tarpon. Do you have any extra open days coming up?
I have a few. I only have a couple in May, and I got maybe 4 or 5 in June.
Yeah, I know you're pretty well booked up. But anyway, Fish and Frank, Captain Jay Weathers, thanks for listening to Radio Fish, and we'll see you on the next one. Bye-bye, boys and girls.